Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We started the holy month of Ramadan this week, and I would like to talk about the Ramadan fast today. Why do Muslims fast in Ramadan? This sounds like a very straightforward question. The answer, however, is not quite straightforward. As we shall see shortly, Muslims fast for a variety of different reasons. They have different expectations of the Ramadan fast. Today, inshallah, I will borrow ideas from Imam Abu Hamid Muhammad Ghazali. Ghazali is a towering figure in Islamic scholarship. He lived in the 11th century AD, some thousand years ago. In his masterpiece, Ihya'i Ulumuddin, The Revival of Religious Sciences, Ghazali has a thorough analysis of the religious practice of fasting. Ghazali observes that although all practicing Muslims fast for 30 days, in the same month, Ramadan, yet they tend to have different expectations for their fast. And I think Ghazali is absolutely right in his assessment. Ghazali identifies three broad categories, three degrees of fast. Each segment of the Muslim community, for that matter, each one of us adheres to one of these three categories. What are those three categories, three degrees of fast? Ordinary fast, extraordinary fast, and perfect fast. Ordinary fast, extraordinary fast, and perfect fast. Every single one of us Muslims adhere to one of these categories or one of these degrees of fast. The average Muslim practices the ordinary fast. That is the vast majority of Muslims. Extraordinary fast is a step up. There is more involved in this type of fast, and there is a lot more to be gained as well. I guess as the saying goes, you get what you pay for. The highest degree of fast is the perfect fast. Think of it as the premium package, right? Now, these three categories are not independent of each other. And this is a very crucial point. They are not independent of each other. The higher categories envelope the lower ones, like three inner circles, three circles that lie inside each other. So the perfect fast, which is the highest degree, includes extraordinary fast and the ordinary fast. The extraordinary fast, the middle one, includes the lower one, which is ordinary fast. Again, this is a super critical point to remember. In my talk today, I will borrow Ghazali's classifications, ordinary, extraordinary, and perfect fast, and use my own thoughts to describe what each of these categories really entail, in a sort of modern language that hopefully resonates with you. My goal today is to introduce the spiritual philosophy of the Ramadan fast. What is the spiritual philosophy of the Ramadan fast? That's my goal today. So let's begin. Ordinary fast, Ruzay Avam. This is the basic level of fasting. It is practiced by ordinary Muslims, by common people. If you go to a typical mosque and ask the imam, I want to fast in this holy month of Ramadan, what should I do? The typical answer is this. You need to abstain from food, drink, smoking, sex from dawn to sunset. That's pretty much what we all do. So what nullifies the fast are these few things. Please pay attention. Aside from these prohibitions, you can pretty much follow your normal routines in Ramadan. In ordinary fast, the emphasis is on the appetite of the stomach and the appetite of sex. That's what the fasting person curbs. That's the focus. What is the intended goal here? What is it that the fasting person wants to accomplish? To discharge an obligation. To discharge an obligation. The fasting person observes a ritual. He fulfills a religious duty. There is no expectation for a transformation in Ramadan. There is no such lofty goal. So this is ordinary fast, and I'm sure you are all familiar with it. The next level of fasting, extraordinary fast, Ruzay Khawas. This is the fasting of the righteous. The question is this: what is the hallmark of the righteous? In Quranic language, taqwa. Taqwa is the hallmark of the righteous. And as you know, the essence of taqwa or righteousness in the Quran is self-control. That's the essence of it. The righteous are very mindful of God. They are very conscious. They are cognizant that they are living in the presence of God. Not all of us feel that way. The righteous, however, vividly see, vividly recognize that they live in the presence of God. So they are very careful to observe moral boundaries. That's their hallmark. So the righteous have an abundance of taqwa, which happens to be what the Quran declares as the main reason for the Ramadan fast. Don't forget, here we're talking about the extraordinary fast, which is the fast of the righteous. The Quran declares that the whole purpose for the fast of Ramadan is piety, righteousness, or taqwa. Chapter 2, verse 183. يا أيها الذين آمنوا كتب عليكم الصيام كما كتب على الذين من قبلكم. O you who believe, fasting is prescribed for you as it was prescribed for those before you. What's the purpose? Why is fasting prescribed? Then the verse continues, لَأَلَّكُمْ تَتَّقُونَ, so that maybe you will have taqwa. The critical point here is maybe, لَأَلَّكُمْ. In Arabic language, لَأَلَّكُمْ means there is no assurance. The verse tells us that I may fast for 30 days, but I may not gain an iota of righteousness or taqwa. Brothers and sisters, I've said it before many times in this platform. Taqwa or piety in Quranic view is not tied to metaphysical beliefs. Taqwa is not tied to religious practices. A person may have strong beliefs in God and do all the required religious chores, and yet he may be very low on taqwa or righteousness. Because taqwa has to do with the content of a person's character. Taqwa has to do with a person's behavior and lifestyle. Now, the extraordinary fast involves a great deal more than just avoiding food, drink, and sex. The expectation here in extraordinary fast is to fill up the tank of taqwa. Just imagine, like your car has a gas tank, we all have a taqwa tank. The expectation of the righteous when they practice extraordinary fast is to fill up their tank of taqwa in Ramadan. Not just discharge of an obligation. That's not the point for their fast. They don't want just to discharge an obligation or fulfill a religious duty. They want to increase their taqwa. Extraordinary fast has a very strong spiritual and moral dimension. To make this point clear, Ghazali narrates from the Prophet Muhammad on what nullifies the fast. And here is that saying of the Prophet Muhammad. Super beautiful. Five things nullify the fast. Five things nullify the fast. Lying, backbiting, tale-bearing, in other words, spreading secrets of people to cause trouble, false oath, lustful look or gaze. These five things nullify the fast. Note that all these five nullifiers of fast have to do with morality, right? They all have to do with morality. The fasting person must ensure that he does not violate any moral codes, or else his fast is null. It's useless. Even though he may refrain from eating and drinking and sex all day long, if he commits one of these five no-nos, his fast is null. It's useless. That's the essence of the extraordinary fast. In extraordinary fast, not only the stomach and the private parts fast, but all of other faculties, all the other faculties that we have, and they are our points of contact with the outside world, they all must fast as well. Our eyes, ears, tongue, hand, feet, they all must fast. Now, we don't have a whole lot of time, and I'm probably going to run out of time today anyways. Let me very briefly explain what the fast of tongue, ear, and eye mean. The fast of tongue, Ruze Zaban. In Ramadan, our tongue must fast. What does that mean? Moral teachers say that of all our faculties, the tongue has the ability to do the most harm, the most damage. How does the tongue harm? Lying, backbiting, false oath, insult, ridicule, mocking, these are all the injuries that the tongue can cause. The fast of tongue is to refrain from these harmful acts. When the tongue fasts during Ramadan, it actually practices self-control. We usually speak very broadly of self-control. I'm now making it very concrete for you. The tongue, when it fasts in Ramadan, it practices self-control. So the tongue does not say a word without getting clearance from our reason, our aql. the Ramadan fast disciplines the tongue. It fixes the problem of loose tongue. Now, here is the critical point. The discipline of tongue is not limited to what it says and what it doesn't say. The tongue becomes more capable of silence. Silence. And brothers and sisters, silence is vital for spiritual development. Saint Augustine, the great Christian theologian, says that once I was intensely, loudly praying to God. I was in tears. Suddenly I received an inspiration. God told me, "Hey, Augustine, listen, you don't need to shout in order for me to hear your prayer. But if you want to hear me, you need to be silent. If you want to hear me, you need to be silent." Amazing, isn't it? It is only in silence that we can hear God. No wonder the Prophet Muhammad, where did he get his first revelation? The Prophet Muhammad was in a cave, in solitude, in silence, when for the first time the archangel Gabriel descended on him, and that was the first encounter of the Prophet Muhammad with the divine. Unfortunately, and here is the bad news, brothers and sisters, here is the bad news. We live in a society where silence is not valued at all. We have TV in every single room in our house. We have radio and TV even in our cars. Even when we walk or get on the treadmill, we have our headphones on. It's as if we are so frightened of being alone, of solitude. Our brave new world is truly a noisy place. Thousands of TV and radio stations, thousands of news and entertainment outlets, social media, gazillion YouTube channels. Get serious. Do you expect to hear the voice of God in the midst of all this noise? Think twice. So, that was the fast of the tongue. Now, let's turn to fast of ear. In Ramadan, our ears must fast. What does that mean? Well, it essentially means that not everything is worth hearing. In Ramadan, the ears become very selective in what they hear, what they let in. Here is the rule of thumb. Whatever is wrong to say, also wrong to hear. That's the simple formula. Whatever is wrong to say is wrong to hear. This is how the Prophet Muhammad describes backbiting or qibat. Al-muqtabu wal-mustami'u sharikana fil ithm. The Prophet Muhammad says, the backbiter and the one who listens to it are partners in that sin. Right? We have partners in crime. We also have partners in sin. It takes two to tango. It takes the backbiter and a person to listen to it in order for this sin of backbiting to take place. Just as you are careful that your mouth does not ingest forbidden food, your ears must not ingest forbidden talk, such as gossip, slander, tale-bearing. Actually, believe it or not, this is precisely how the Quran puts it. Chapter 5, verse 42. That's how the Quran puts it. Sammauna lil kazabe akaluna lis-suht. listeners to falsehood or consumers of illicit gain. Listeners to falsehood or consumers of illicit gain. So in Ramadan, the ears practice self-control or taqwa. The ears learn to control the flow of talk that comes in. Just like a traffic cop. Just picture a traffic cop that controls the traffic. Our ears also learn to control the traffic that comes in inside. Now let's turn to the fast of eye, Ruze Chashm. In Ramadan, our eyes must fast as well. You see, all follow our heart's desires, right? You follow what your heart desires. Whatever you're passionate about, that's what you're going to do. That's what you're going to follow. That's what where your dreams are. Right? So we follow our heart's desires. No faculty has more power over the heart as much as our eyes. As Imam Ali says, Al-qalbu mushaful basar. The heart is the archive of eyes. Whatever the eyes see, the heart archives. Whatever you lay eyes on will leave an impression, an imprint on your heart. Those of you who are familiar with Iranian poetry, I'm sure you have heard this poem from Baba Tahir. ز دست دیده و دل هر دو فریاد که هر چه دیده بیند دل کند یاد. Whatever the eyes see, the heart wishes. Remember, we're talking about the fast of eyes, right? We need to know where the heart gets its food from. By sight, what we see, mostly. If you want to change your behavior, you need to change your heart. And to change your heart, you need to control the input, the impressions which your heart receives. We humans are very visual. We all know that. We are very visual. So naturally, our eyes have the greatest ability to impress our heart. And that's why the fast of eyes is so critical. As Rumi teaches, if you are serious about spiritual development, if you're serious about soul development, you must control what you see. When Rumi completed his spiritual journey to God, he was so captivated by the beauty of God. He was so consumed with the beauty of God. Then in a moment of trance, he said to God, so profound, so beautiful. That's Rumi's prayer to God in that moment of trance. کاش کی از غیر تو آگه نبودی جان من خود ندانستی بجز تو جان معنی دان من غیر رویت هرچه بینم نور چشمم کم شود هر کسی را رحمت ای پرده مژگان من. Rumi says to God, I wish my soul was aware of none but you. Except your face, O Lord, whatever I see dims my eyesight. O my eyelids, don't allow just anyone in. In other words, Rumi asked his eyelids, be very selective, close down, shut down. If what is in front of you is not God or godly, if it does not bear the mark of God, do not let it in. This is what the fast of eye is all about. Training the eye so it does not gaze at anything that does not bear the mark of goodness or the mark of God. Now, the fast of eyes is not limited to avoiding toxic gaze at the opposite sex. This is the minimum. We should avoid anything that is useless. Now I'm shifting gear here. We should avoid anything that is useless for our spiritual pursuit. Anything that may distract us from our goal. Let me make a crucial point here, so hopefully you can better grasp what extraordinary fast aims to accomplish. Remember, I've been talking about extraordinary fast, which includes the fast of eyes, ears, tongue, hand, feet, right? So what is it that the person wants to accomplish in this extraordinary fast? There are many things that do not violate Islamic law, yet they may be vain and futile. They may be useless. When we get preoccupied with these useless, vain, and futile things, they steal our attention. We will not pay attention to what matters for our soul development, our spiritual progress. Let me give you one concrete example, something that you and I are afflicted by these days. Many of us spend a ton of hours on social media every day. We all do. We receive hundreds of video clips or text messages every day, and they all contain junk. They are useless, or at least most of them are junk and useless. From the perspective of Sharia, Islamic law, they may not contain anything that is questionable, such as nude pictures, yet their content is useless. It is junk. When we become used to junk, it will have a degrading effect on our aspirations. It will dumb us down. I'm sure you've heard of, dumbing down of America, how our media dumbs us down, right? This is serious. Unfortunately, this is what happened when we become addicted to consuming junk through these media platforms, and also social media for that matter. Let me bring in Rumi to elaborate this dumbing down issue, because this is really, really serious. And I hope that in this Ramadan season, you pay attention to that. At least try to reduce the amount of intake of junk from the outside. In book 4 of Mathnavi, Rumi tells the story of a community that was hostile to God's messengers. These folks, this community, turned their backs to God's messengers. Why? Why did these people dislike the prophets? Rumi puts his finger on their habits. These folks had some bad habits. This story involves a lot of going back and forth between the prophets and people in that community, but towards the end of the story, the hostile community confesses to the prophets. ما به لغو و لهو فربه گشته ایم. در نصیحت خیش را نسرشته ایم. هست قوت ما دروغ و لاف و لاغ. شورش معده است ما را زین بلاغ. Those people told the prophets, we have grown fat on frivolity and diversion. We have not steeped ourselves in admonition. Our food is falsehood, idle boasts, and humor. Our stomachs are turned by your talk and your message. That's what those hostile people told the prophets. We were raised on absurd and nonsense. We have a huge amount of absurd and nonsense intake every day. What you guys, what you prophets say is alien to us. We cannot digest what you guys say. Your talk makes us nauseous. The moral of this story is this. You and I need to be very selective in what we consume. The extraordinary fast trains our eyes, ears, and so forth to choose only what is useful for our spiritual well-being. Now let's turn to the last category of fast, the perfect fast, Ruzay Khasul Khas. Now this is the highest degree of fasting. Ghazali says it is the fast of the prophets. It is the fast of the prophets, saints, and those intimate with God, or as I would call them, the spiritual elite. The spiritual elite. The perfect fast includes everything I said about ordinary and extraordinary fast. The stomach, tongue, eyes, ears, hand, feet, they all fast. In addition, the heart fasts as well. The heart fasts as well. What does that mean? Fast of the heart boils down to refraining from worldly thoughts and worldly concerns. Total disregard for anything that is not godly. That's the fast of the prophets, saints, and the spiritual elite. Here, the fasting person turns her attention only to things that might elevate her. The key here is attention and preoccupation. What is your attention? What is your preoccupation? You may be avoiding food, sex, and so forth during the day in Ramadan, but your mind is preoccupied with something else. Your heart is somewhere else. At the practical level, the person who does the perfect fast, she trains herself to control her thought currents, her emotions, and her inclinations. Now, I submit to you, the average person does not have much control over her thoughts and emotions. Let me tell you something about my daughter. The other night, my 9-year-old daughter, Liana, came to me and said, "Dad, I can't sleep. I have bad thoughts." I told my daughter, "Honey, just think of good stuff. Think of the time you went to Maui or you went to Cabo." My daughter looked at me weirdly and said, "Dad, I can't help it. These thoughts don't leave me alone." I think we can all relate to what my daughter was going through that night. Thoughts invade us like floodwaters. They come in and take over. They alter our inner state. They alter our emotions and how we feel. And often we succumb to our thoughts because we lack mastery over our thoughts. In perfect fast, self-control now expands. In perfect fast, self-control expands to another area: thoughts, mind, and heart. The spiritual elite are in total control of their sensory faculties, eyes, ears, tongue. They are also in total control of their thoughts, emotions, inclinations, and desires. This total self-control is very empowering, very empowering. These folks, the spiritual elite, have an abundance of power. not over other people, but over their own self, over their thoughts, emotions, inclinations. This inner power cannot be taken away. Nobody, if you have this inner power, nobody can take it away from you. Why? Because the source of that power resides inside, not outside. We're running out of time. Let me close with a final remark on why we fast in Ramadan. What is the spiritual philosophy of the Ramadan fast? Ramadan is a training ground. Ramadan is a training camp. The goal should be to train our faculties, eyes, ears, tongue, hands, and feet. We should aim to discipline our faculties, to make them spiritually and morally fit. So not just the stomach, but the whole person must participate in the fast. But I must confess, the perfect fast is probably too much for me, right? It's too much for me. But ordinary fast is not desirable either. If only our stomach fasts, but our tongue, ears, and eyes are all on the loose, this sort of fast will not produce much moral and spiritual benefit. As Imam Ali so eloquently puts it, كَمْ مِنْ صَائِمٍ لَيْسَ لَهُ مِنْ صِيَامِهِ إِلَّا الْجُوءِ وَالذَّمَى. There are many who fast, but their fast is nothing but hunger and thirst. I hope in this Ramadan season we all try to have higher expectations of our fast. We need to train all of our faculties to have taqwa. And perhaps more importantly, we should continue our Ramadan mindset after we leave this holy month. I wish you all a very successful Ramadan fast this year. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.